Welcome to yet another exciting season of Sisters in Conversation, the podcast. I'm your host, Tebelo Motsane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On this podcast, I profile women of color in the legal profession in an attempt to celebrate their contribution to the profession. We journey through their individual stories of perseverance and resilience and overcoming challenges like imposter syndrome, racism, and sexism, to name a few. I hope you're geared up for what promises to be another insightful, informative, and empowering season. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to this podcast.
Digital gives you 1% cash back when you apply for a home loan online. Human connects you to credit experts who make sure you get the best deal. Get a dedicated relationship banker, 100% home loans up to 5 million rand, and preferential rates. Enjoy the complete private banking experience with private clients from Nedbank. Digital when you want it, human when you need it. Search Nedbank Private Clients online. See money differently. Nedbank, we are a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
Welcome to another episode of Sisters in Conversation. I'm your host, Tebelo Motsane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On today's episode, I'm with Dr. Giselle Chloe Lavita. She's a senior lecturer at the University of Johannesburg, where she teaches law of property. Giselle completed her LLD at Stellenbosch University with her dissertation entitled The Regulation of Airbnb, a Property Law Perspective. She graduated with her doctorate at the age of 25 as one of the youngest LLD recipients in South Africa. Giselle, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me, Tebelo. I'm really excited to be here.
Wonderful. After reading your bio, I'm just like, drops mic. We're done. Oh my goodness. Giselle, okay, let's start at the beginning. We're going to make it to LLD, youngest recipient, age 25. But let's start at the beginning. Can you tell us a little bit about Giselle, your upbringing, where you were born and raised, where you attended primary, high school, any childhood memories that you're fond of or not fond of that you'd like to share with us?
Okay, sure. So I grew up in Cape Town and I was raised by a single mother. And because of that, we experienced a lot of financial constraints, which led to us having to move many times. And I think I probably attended 5 different primary schools. And the first time I experienced stability was actually when I went to Stellenbosch University, because I stayed in a residence for 4 years. And that was the longest time I'd ever stayed in one place. Oh. Yeah. And so Stellenbosch University, Irene Ladies Residence, really felt like home to me. I grew up in Cape Town and I went to school in Cape Town and I completed my matric at Norman Henschel High School. And throughout my education, I received scholarships to fund my education. It's very rare that you hear of somebody who has a bursary for creche. But sure, my mom really persevered to make sure I could go to UCT Educare. Mm. And I was able to have a scholarship from there onward. And I've actually been really fortunate to have scholarships all my life up until the end of my doctorate. And so I did quite well in primary school. Apart from maths, it was showing me flames then already. And I would say that's one of the genuine reasons why I had to go into law.
Okay. Like, okay.
Any of the other options were not an option.
That just goes to prove that maths has always been a scam, because we did just fine. And I if I recall, I must have gotten a D for, yeah, definitely D. I just made it. I had just made it, you know, matric wise. And I mean, I qualified for law, which is what I had wanted to study anyway. So it worked out.
Yes, I think it's a requirement for lawyers to not be good at maths. Because
Okay,
I,
so.
oh, I wanted to share that during my matric specifically, my parents were not in the best financial position, but they made sure that I could go for tutoring for maths. And whenever I was interviewed for any position, they would look at my transcript for matric and it would be like 777477. And then they would ask, so that I'd be like, so let's talk about this for maths. And I would say, in my mind, that is the
That's
highest
brilliant.
mark because I worked so hard.
So yeah, the rest came naturally, right? So so the one you actually had to work for.
Yeah. I put in hours for maths and I'm so proud of my 52%.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like I said, it just goes to show that it's a scam because I haven't actually ever had to think about a parabola, like ever in my life.
Is, yeah.
Okay. All right. So, okay. So the re okay. Why did you then, pursue law? Other than the fact that you suck at maths, what was the other reason?
So I think growing up, when you're a very chatty child and you've got a bit of sassiness, people are always like, oh, you should be a lawyer. And in the community, people who were lawyers were esteemed. And I also really wanted to escape poverty. And I knew law was a genuine opportunity to escape poverty. And then as my life progressed, just going through all the applications and just seeing how the scholarships would fall in line, I felt like it was really God's plan for me to pursue law. And so at some point I realized it was my calling. And after that, it made things easier when you are confident that you are where you're supposed to be.
So, just on the topic of poverty, what, looking back, what were some of the pointers, or like, how can I ask the question? Like, what made you realize that you were poor at the time? I think that's how I'm trying to ask it. Just for somebody who is listening to the show and they're feeling like, oh my goodness, I'm never going to get out of this. Just to highlight that they are not alone and that they can make it out of poverty. What were some of the things that stood out for you, at the time, or even just looking back now?
So I think I was consciously aware of it throughout primary school even. I was aware that everybody around me had nice lunches and they lived in nice houses and we lived in a flat that we were just about able to pay for and sometimes not able to pay for. And then in high school, I also went to X Model C school where everybody had nice things and I didn't. And I had to start working then already. And like when it came to the time to apply for universities, I couldn't even afford the application fees. And so from the beginning, I've been working, I would say potentially, I would say technically since I was 16, but if I had other opportunities where people weren't questioning my age, I was working before that. And then I think I was very acutely aware of my financial situation when I arrived at Stellenbosch University. A lot of the students there are really wealthy. And I remember they, in the beginning of welcoming week, they don't ask you whether you want to eat food at the university. They just say you will be eating food at the university. And I was panicked because I was like, how am I going to pay for this food at the university? And I stopped eating the food thinking that if I don't swipe my student card, then they won't be able to charge me. And I'd just eat toast. only to find out that they were charging me anyway. And then it was like time for us to register our devices with like for Wi-Fi or internet and things. And I think at that time it was 360 rand. It's like, I can't afford to pay that. And everybody else was going with their laptops to register their laptops. And I didn't have a laptop. And I didn't even register for the internet for the longest time until I found out I could put it on my student account. So for the first few weeks, I didn't even have access to the internet. And for my first 2 years of law school, I didn't have a laptop. And that really disadvantaged me. Because while everybody can go home and work at ease on their laptop, I had to be on campus using the public, like, libraries. The public computers, you have to stay on campus late. You lose a lot of time, actually, having to walk around and just not being able to work in the comfort of your own home. And so then I had to start waitressing while working, and I waitressed for a year and a half to save up for a laptop. And it was really challenging because when my friends were going out to do fun things, I had to be a waitress. Sometimes I had to leave class early because I had to be waitressing at 4 p.m., but class was until 5, and I'd have to leave class, miss that class, go to my waitressing job, and then be a waitress until 11 p.m. Then you come home, maybe shower, and then I had another job at Rez, which is called door duty, where you sit from 11 p.m. until 6 p.m. at the Rez door to make sure that if any girl is trying to come in and she doesn't have a student card, you can let her in. So imagine class ends at 4, you've been awake the whole day, you go on your feet to be a waitress for multiple hours dealing with people, and then you have to come home and work again throughout the night at 6. You finish at 6 and then your classes start again at 8. So it was really, really challenging. And that really made me acutely aware, especially the times when my friends wanted to go out, even just for a lunch somewhere, and I had to say, oh, I can't go out. Can we eat at a place where I can use my student card? And that was really unpleasant because in Stellenbosch, kids go to wine farms and they eat really nice things. And I'm asking, can we please be and hang out in the cafeteria? So in a sense, you become the boring friend because you never want to do fun stuff, but it's actually because you can't afford to do fun stuff.
Sure, that just like that just reminds me of I had seen a post somewhere that was just like, we really just need to be open about our finances in friendships, you know, like we live this lifestyle where you basically an Instagrammable lifestyle, right? And sometimes your friends are the friends who want to drink champagne, and you end up not chilling with them because you just don't have money for champagne. Like, it's just completely out of your budget. But because you are trying to keep up appearances, you get yourself into that, and you're essentially using your credit card to pay for a bottle of champagne because you're just too scared to tell your friends that I can't afford champagne. Why can't we go to a cheaper place? You know? And it just highlights the importance of friends and being able to be vulnerable around friends and not having to feel like you have to be somebody else.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I think when I was at Stellenbosch University, I really did have a sisterhood of people who understood me. And they may not have been able to sympathize, but they could empathize, and for the most part they were happy to have lunch with me in the cafeteria, and sometimes would want to take me out. And I don't ever feel like my financial situation changed our friendship. I feel like they always saw me for who I am. And one of my favorite memories or Yeah, I would say memories is one of my friends. When I stayed in Stellenbosch, and my parents actually also stayed in Stellenbosch. I have a stepdad now. And so my parents stayed in Stellenbosch as well. And my one friend, she loved to come visit our two-bedroom flat with very little space. And I never ever felt like insecure about her being there, despite the fact that her car is probably the size of my room. And that in Pretoria, she lives in a triple story. Mm. But I never ever felt embarrassed. And it just goes to show the quality of friends that you can make in university. And I think sometimes people with money are often judged, and we think, oh, they might not be able to understand or empathize. Mm. But one thing I really realized during my time at Stellenbosch is that people really, they see beyond your financial status if you allow them to. Mm. And I think that's where vulnerability comes in. And I think it's really difficult to be vulnerable sometimes, especially when you know you cannot lead the same life as your friends. But if they are truly your friends, they'll understand and they'll be willing to come to your two-bedroom little house because they're coming to see you, not your house.
Mm, sure. So important. Thank you so much for sharing that, Giselle. You know, so after you managed to finally afford a laptop, did you stop working or did you continue?
So when I was able to afford a laptop, I think I started working a bit more. I continued working a bit. You know how people say once you experience money, you can't stop experiencing money? Mm-hmm. It wasn't necessarily that for me, but I sent money home. And with waitressing in Stellenbosch, it was, I don't want to say easy to make money, but it was a viable option. So I did continue working until the working environment got really toxic. I don't think many people understand how awful it is to be a waiter or a waitress. It was one of the most challenging experiences. My friends would beg me to quit because they'd say when I came back, I would be so depressed. Because like you have to deal with multiple people, multiple personalities. And it's also very competitive when people are fighting for tables and your manager is not the nicest manager, or you're getting sworn at by your manager and shouted at in the kitchen. And then you have to go out and smile at the customer like it's nobody's business, that like you were just verbally insulted from head to toe because you did something small that was wrong. So there was one day that was just a tipping point for me as a waitress, and I just decided I'm not doing this anymore. But I think that if I worked in a nicer environment, I might have continued being a waitress.
I don't think of it from that perspective. I'm just a few episodes ago, I was just like, perspective is so important in shaping us, in us becoming the people we are. Like now that you've told me the other side of waitressing, I know, I mean, I believe I'm always compassionate towards waitresses and waiters, but now I know that there's like another side that we don't see, you know? And by the time this person is putting up a smile, they've actually endured so much. So this has just made me aware to be more, even more compassionate.
Thank you. Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand how difficult being a waiter is. I think it's really a character building experience. And even though it wasn't a pleasant experience, it did improve my ability to engage with others. But overall, I think that of course sometimes you get a waiter who's really not good at their job, but And I know there are a lot of criticisms about our tipping system in South Africa. I get very upset with people when they are unwilling to tip 10% for a waiter because it's the bare minimum. The person put your order in. Hopefully they got your order right. They brought it. Those are things that you weren't going to do yourself. And it really upsets me when people are unwilling to give at least 10% because being on the other side of the table, knowing how hectic it can be when you have to smile after being sworn at because you didn't cut the cake at a small enough size and you're being too generous with the cake it's crazy. And then you have to serve your cake with a smile. And I think it's so important to make sure that your server just got the bare minimum. Like if I go out with somebody and they offer to pay, I will ask the waiter afterwards, was your tip fair? Because if it wasn't, I'd like to compensate you. Because very few times did anybody ever bother to ask me that. And you just have to accept whatever you get. And some people are so cruel about tipping. And it's kind of hurtful from the other side of the table when you've really put in effort, you've smiled, you've listened to them, you've cracked jokes, and then they have an issue with their food and then they refuse to tip you. Like, I didn't cook the food. Why am I suffering? So
I get it. That's the waiter's just the messenger, literally. Like, I just brought the food to the table.
Yeah, I rang up the correct meal. Go fight with the chef, not me.
Yeah. Okay, I get it. Sure. All right. And then let's continue with the rest of your journey. You then graduate. Did you graduate cum laude or you just
So I would start by my matric year and I would say that I never even aspired to go to university because of my financial situation. I didn't really think it was much of an option. And then a conversation that was instrumental in who I am now is one day, one of my friend's moms, she pulled me aside. She's a doctor. And she pulled me aside and she said, like, you're really bright. You should apply for scholarships. There are a lot of scholarships. You should, like, apply for them. And I didn't even realize that was an option. And I think that's a present issue today, that many students don't even know the options available to them. And so she had that conversation with me. And then I was like, okay, I need to apply to a law school or some law schools. And I really wanted to get out of my comfort zone. And I decided I would apply to UWC because at the time they were known to have a really good law school. And I applied to Stellenbosch with the idea of getting out of my comfort zone. And then UWC offered me a full scholarship with accommodation. So it was basically going to be everything I needed. And then Stellenbosch offered me just tuition without accommodation. So they allocated me a place, but they didn't give me the money to stay in that place. And I honestly don't know what possessed me, but I was like, okay, I'm going to Stellenbosch.
Be out of your comfort zone, just that's what possessed you, being out of your comfort zone.
Like I really wanted a fresh start. Like a lot of my classmates would be at UWC, and I kind of wanted to create a new persona for myself. And so I decided I was going to Stellenbosch. And I remember when I got the scholarship to go to Stellenbosch just for the tuition, I was so surprised. I was like at school and I was crying and I told the teacher, oh my gosh, I got the scholarship, but like it doesn't cover like accommodation. I'm a bit concerned about that. And she said, oh, there are no scholarships that would cover accommodation in your first year. You should just be happy that you got this tuition. And that was incorrect because there are opportunities that cover accommodation. Mm-hmm. And that just goes to show that it's so important for teachers as well to be informed, because imagine I had given up based on what she said. But I didn't follow her advice and I decided I'm still going to Stellenbosch, and I had never been to Stellenbosch before. The day that I arrived in Stellenbosch to start university was my first time in Stellenbosch. And like I said, in my first year, I didn't have a laptop and I was struggling financially, so I was eating extremely unhealthily. So I was eating like fries for lunch and wasn't exercising because I didn't have money for a gym membership. I was stressed about how I was going to pay for things, and also I was so used to in high school just being able to scan through the work and get a distinction. So I thought that was going to be the case.
I know. How on earth did we get away with that? Like,
oh, university will humble you.
I'm actually thinking about how I would just remember in the morning of the cycle test that we've got a cycle test, and then I just like literally skim through the work 30 minutes before and then get like 70-80. How did we get away with that? Sure.
Yeah, they set us up for failure, actually.
I'm telling you. Sure. Okay, so first year humbles you.
So for my first test mark that I got back, I got 37%. It's like, what's happening here? Ooh. And so what had actually happened was, in my first week of law school, not law school, my first week of orientation, it's very hectic. There's a lot of socializing, lots of events. Stellenbosch is really hot. And I got really sick. So I ended up getting tonsillitis and I had to go to hospital because it was that serious. And so I was in hospital for the first week of law school and I missed out on everything. So the foundational principles, I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know where my classes were. I also enrolled for French and I missed the first week where they teach you all the basics. And so I spent the first year just entirely lost in French. And my name is French. So my French teacher would be shouting at me, Giselle. I was like, I don't know. I really don't know. Like, it was so hard. French was so challenging for me.
Giselle, also it, not French, actually.
Yeah. And then she, like, I remember the one day we had to do an oral in French, and I just completely blanked to the point where I said to her, can I please just sit down? Like, give me zero. I know nothing. So first year was challenging for me. To put it light.
I can just, like, see how dizzy you are. Like, sure.
And I didn't know the things that other people know. So other people from more privileged backgrounds or the surrounding areas of Stellenbosch knew that there are people who sell notes and you can buy past papers, and if you study these past papers, you'll do well. I had no idea about those things. And then at near the end of the first year, I was called in by the faculty to say, you are at risk of failing this entire year. And you remember I was on a scholarship, right? And if you fail, you have to pay back the scholarship. Mm-hmm. And I was at risk of failing to the point where it was suggested that I should just decide to fail some modules and give up on them entirely to focus on more important modules.
Mm.
And that conversation rocked me. I left with a completely new perspective of life because there was no way I was going to pay back like 100,000 rand.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately after the conversation, I went straight to the library and I went to print out posters to post in my, like to put up in my room. And it was the most aggressive things ever. It would be things like, do you want to be a first year, second year? Do you want to have student debt? You don't like napping.
Yeah.
People would come into my room and they'd be like, sure, this is a bit
hectic. Calm down. Take it easy.
But I'm somebody who is motivated by people not believing in me. So when I used to see those posters, they encouraged me to get out of bed and do what needed to be done. And so eventually, so I started to work harder than I'd ever worked before. And then at this time, we write 3 tests in a year. For some tests, for some modules, I had already failed 2 out of the 3 tests. So I needed to save myself.
Yeah.
And I've never worked harder in my entire life. I remember one night, everybody was asleep. It was perhaps 2 o'clock in the morning. I was physically ill from being awake for so long that I walked into a wall.
Oh my goodness.
Because I was so dizzy. And that's the level of hard work that I was putting in to pass. And at the end of the year, when we got our marks, I actually passed all of my modules and I passed so well that I was able to tutor the modules that it was originally suggested that I give up on because it's likely that I would fail.
That just gave me goosebumps. Sure. Okay. So you move on to second year and then like basically that's it. You then just really excel through the rest of the years because of the posters in your room, basically.
No, not really, because second year, so I had to continue working because I didn't have a laptop. So I was working towards my laptop, and because I had to send money home, I had to continue working. And so then I started tutoring as well. So I was working about 3 jobs while studying, and it was hectic, but you'd find that actually when you have very little time to study, you're very intentional about the time that you do study. So I did quite well in my second year, and then in my third year, I fell into a deep depression, like significantly to the point where my friends had to take me to the psychologist because they were so concerned about me. And I gained 25 kgs in 1 year. And just not even being able to recognize myself in the mirror, that was awful. To go from being tiny to being category 2 obese in terms of your BMI scale. And I know people say BMI is not accurate, but I was significantly unhealthy and uncomfortable in my body. And if you're uncomfortable in your body, it really changes the way you're able to perform. Your self-confidence takes a knock.
Absolutely.
And also you're unhealthy, so you can't do the things you used to do. And also people treat you differently. And they say awful things to you, like, are you pregnant? And then you say no. And then they're like, I think you are.
Gosh.
So being overweight really affected me negatively, and it affected me in my final year as well, because I was still overweight and I was trying to lose weight, but I didn't actually have sufficient knowledge of how to lose weight in a sustainable manner. And so I was on those strict diets of your treat is dark chocolate, one dark chocolate block, and you have to eat salad and chicken every day. And that kind of made me miserable, which just contributed to my mental health even more. So I didn't fail anything, but I wasn't thriving because I wasn't the person that I used to be.
Sure. And how did you manage, like, I mean, you know, apart from the help you got from your friends, how did you manage to convince yourself to pull yourself out of that depression and to just conquer through with your studies?
I've always been somebody who's very determined, and I think I had high functioning depression, so I was going to do what needed to be done. And in hindsight, I had such bad anxiety, and I didn't even know what anxiety was at the time. I thought everybody felt the way I felt, that they were a little nervous, but I don't think everybody else was throwing up before an exam, but that's what I was doing from nerves. I wasn't sleeping well at all, because if you're working three jobs while studying, your body is under so much stress, and sleep is 5 hours is a dream. So, but I always knew that giving up was not an option. In the back of my mind, I knew, first of all, I cannot pay back now 4 years of scholarships. Mm-hmm. And it's time for me to make even more money, and I wanted that financial freedom. So even though I wasn't necessarily happy, my goal of financial freedom never left me. And the belief that I have a role to play in the legal sphere was something that stuck by me. And over the years, various pastors would just randomly give me words of encouragement, saying that they see me in the legal field. And when strangers are telling you that they have a confidence that you will do well in the legal sphere, it encourages you. So even though I was not in my best form, I still believed that was where I needed to be.
Sure. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Giselle. Sure. I think we must just, in the interest of time, I'd also just like us to touch on your academic journey, right? You are a senior lecturer. Are you the youngest senior lecturer?
I mean, we haven't spoken about it, but it's possible that I am.
But yeah, so I just want to basically speak about your academic journey. Wait, can you do an LLD without a master's? Or did you go with a master's? I don't even know.
So I'll give you a quick rundown. Basically, I was in my final year of law school, I was a legal research intern at the South African Research Chair in Property Law. And so in your final year, they give you a bit of a scholarship for being a research assistant. And then at the end of my final year, I found out that there was a master's opportunity for a scholarship. So I applied for that and I got the scholarship. And that was such a blessing because it was also full funding. So I was able to do my master's through Stellenbosch University with the funding of the South African Property Chair. And then, so my topic was Airbnb, and which is very relevant in my opinion. And so I think near the end of the first year, I had done really well. I had written a lot and I had written quickly, and I wrote at a high level. And so my professor felt the quality of my work was that of a doctorate. And so she said we should apply for an upgrade to have my master's converted into a doctorate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
So then the process is that you take your master's and what you've wrote already, and you create a doctoral proposal. So what you would have written if you were applying for a doctorate, you write for, you write a proposal for a doctorate. And then the university sends your work to 3 external lecturers, so to different universities, who are property law experts, because that was my topic, of course. So these property law experts, they read what I've written and they consider, will I be making a novel contribution to the property law field? And then the experts said, yes, they think it's very important and it should have been converted long ago into a doctorate. And so all of them approved it, and then I was able to upgrade to a doctorate.
Sounds unreal. It sounds unreal. And the reason I asked was just from your bio, because I didn't see anything about LLM. So I was like, okay, can you just go straight to, you know, LLD without pursuing an LLM? So that actually just sounds unreal.
Yeah, it was such a blessing, and it was actually a dream of mine for many years. I didn't actually share this dream with anybody because during undergrad, I wasn't exactly doing the best. So it seemed very unrealistic. But one of our professors, the one day, he said the person who co-authored his textbook, she got her doctorate upgraded from a master's. Like, her master's was upgraded to a doctorate, and I sat there and was like, wow, I didn't even know there was a possibility. It would be so amazing if that could happen to me. And when I started my master's, I worked hard with the intention, and I prayed regularly that that would happen to me. And God answered my prayer.
Goosebumps. That sounds, it actually sounds unreal. It sounds unreal. Sure. I don't know what to say. I mean, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And how's like your mom when all of this is happening?
So my mom actually enrolled for a master's at Stellenbosch. So she had her undergrad. So she did her master's in psychology. And so she was at Stellenbosch at the same time that I was at Stellenbosch. Okay. So I would run into her on campus often. And yeah, I think she's really proud of me. So technically I'm not a first generation student because she beat me to it. But I think in a sense she inspired me to study, and now I've inspired her to do her doctorate.
Oh, that is amazing. I actually have no words. I'm actually just still trying to process what happened. And It's just giving me goosebumps, because sometimes you say be specific when you pray, but actually I'm just seeing that I've fallen short of just being specific. And so this has been like a reminder of just how important it is that we just go back to the basics. Like, God, I see what you're doing with other children. I want that for me too. And then actually then putting in the work. That's exactly what you did. You were like, I wish that also happens to me. And you prayed on it, and then you worked hard for it. And sounds like an easy formula. If we're just taking it back to basics, I mean, sure, I could do that. I could be specific and then I could work hard. But yeah, a lot of work obviously goes into it. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. I definitely agree with you that we do need to be specific in our prayers. So when I was starting my master's, I actually saved my folder of my master's on my computer as a doctorate. So instead of LLM, I saved it as LLD. And I think it is possibly saved as LLD youngest LLD graduate in Stellenbosch University's history. In Jesus' name, amen.
What?
And that's what I saved it as. And that's what I would have all my documents as. And then just before I would submit it to my professor, I would change it to say master's.
But that's also like one of the memes that I had seen, or one of the quotes that I had seen, that your dreams and your basically, yeah, your dreams, you must just be borderline delusional about your goals. Yes. So that's it. You must be delusional.
Yeah, you definitely have to be delusional. And my friends, they always laugh at me because they say I'm the most delusional person they know. Then my delusions come to light, but it's not just me being delusional. I'm praying about it. I'm working at it. And it might sound delusional, and objectively it might be. Like, I didn't tell people I want to get my doctorate at age 25. I would sound insane. In fact, I did tell one person. I went to a psychiatrist once and I told him I'm going to be getting my doctorate at the age of 25. And he emailed my psychologist and he said, either she is brilliant or she's absolutely delusional.
Okay, so now we can confirm that you're brilliant.
I think that also motivated me. I was like, no, how could you say
that? Have you been able to go back to him and tell him that you're brilliant?
I actually referenced him in my acknowledgements in my doctorate because I had been struggling mentally. And while he had said I was delusional, the guidance he gave was really important for my mental health, for me to make my doctorate happen. So I thanked him in my doctorate, and perhaps I'll send him an email to tell him, thank you so much. That one session with you was instrumental in me being able to delusionally achieve my doctorate at age 25.
Hectic. Hectic. Your life is honestly sounding like a movie. Sure. And then you have now just basically, you know, you're even in academics. Why did you decide to take the course of being like a lecturer? Did you never imagine yourself at like a law firm or, you know, litigation or, you know, pursuing conveyancing? Just tell us a little bit about this journey that you've chosen in academia.
So I did vacation work at Bowman's, Worksman's, Hogan Lovells, Weber, and it was amazing experiences. And then I got the scholarship to do my master's. And from that scholarship, I then had the opportunity to upgrade to a doctorate. And I think you'll know that funding is so hard to get. And my logic was I needed to jump at this opportunity to get this funding while it was available to me, because it's easier to get funding when you are a young student and it's the natural progression to go from LLB to LLM to LLD than for you to be in practice and then leave, do a master's. It's really difficult to get a scholarship if they see you in practice already. They say to you, why don't you pay using your own money? And I also wanted to be able to have my formal education completed so that when I start working, I do not have the pressure of knowing that after work I have to go home and do write 1,000 words every night. And I want to have a family at some point. And I think it could be really stressful for me, and I don't like suffering. So I wanted to be finished suffering as young as possible. And now with the idea of being in academia, it was actually always my dream to move to Johannesburg. And then the opportunity arose for me to lecture at UJ. And so I was really excited about the opportunity, because in high school, when I applied to Stellenbosch University, they give you 3 options as to what you can choose. And so my first option was law, my second option was teaching, and my third option was a BCom. And in my heart, I've always been very drawn to teaching, and I love the idea of being able to share my knowledge with other people. And so I would have loved to be a teacher if I didn't get accepted to law school. And so it feels like an answer to prayer that I'm now having the opportunity to teach using my legal knowledge.
Oh, I love that. I absolutely love that. Sure, I absolutely love that. Okay.
Yeah.
I actually don't even know what to say. I usually have stuff to say. Like I said, yeah, your life just sounds like a movie, but sure, yeah, I actually love that. I love that. Just in the interest of time, our conversation sadly has come to an end. But is there anything that you would like to share with us that I haven't asked? Just even if it's just words of encouragement for somebody, or if it's anything interesting. I mean, well, firstly, we should actually just go read your your dissertation. I'm sure that would be interesting. But is there anything that you would like to share with us that I haven't asked you?
Yeah. So one thing that I always try to emphasize to anybody in any sphere is, if you don't ask, the answer is always no. And yeah, I think it's so important to make your needs known. And throughout my career so far, I've had to be extraordinarily vulnerable. And vulnerability can be a beautiful thing, but it can be an awfully tough, painful thing. But I think it's important to make your needs known. As the Bible says, knock and the door will be opened, ask and you will receive. And so sometimes you have to knock on multiple doors, but I think a large issue in our society is funding, and people don't know the funding that's available to them. And I think that people are scared to ask, but the worst somebody can say is no. And we shouldn't have to struggle. I always like to think that there's infinite money in the world. You just have to find the right person. And there are people who are going to believe in you and give you a chance. And you need to ask. And also you need to take care of your mental health. I think people are so embarrassed to speak about it. And especially when in the legal fraternity, there are a lot of people struggling mentally and they're not open about it. And I think that people should be open to seeing psychiatrists and psychologists and making sure that they are their best form, because only when you are taking care of yourself are you able to give the best to others.
Sure. Thank you. That is so important. You actually really just touched on something I was telling my cousin just last night. I was just explaining to him that I'm in the process of putting together a workshop for September in Johannesburg. So I'm reaching out to sponsors And I said to him, I'm just like, I'm also actually just being delusional about the amount I'm requesting. But I was like, the worst that can happen is them say no. And then I'm not going to be in a worse off position, because if they don't give me that money, it's money I don't have. So I'm not losing anything from asking. I'll still have zero. And I may as well just ask, because I have nothing to lose. If they say no, it doesn't mean that I'm now, you know, on minus, because I don't have to give anything if they say no. So you just answered my question.
Yeah, I think it's important. And by asking, you're making yourself known and you're making your needs known. And now they know the value that you attach to what you offer. So even though it might sound delusional now, in a few months, they might think, oh, you know, there was that lady who was interested and she had a great idea and she clearly knows her worth. Let's reach out to her.
I love that. I love that. And I mean, for my sake, I hope you're right. I hope it happens exactly like that. Giselle, thank you so much. It has really, really been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for availing yourself, and thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for reminding me of just how beautiful being vulnerable can be. And I really hope that I'm also courageous enough to tap into my vulnerability from time to time and to actually be in a position to use that actually to my advantage. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you so much, Dabela, and I really appreciate the work that you are doing and the encouragement that you're providing to so many people, even those beyond the legal fraternity.
Thank you so much. All right, Giselle, enjoy the rest of your week. I have to let you go now. Time is up, but we'll be in touch. I have you on Instagram now, so we'll be in touch.
Yeah, okay. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.